How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of news to talk about this week. It is our final show before the biggest UFC event of 2012. Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen 2. Taking place this Saturday night, Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll talk about that show. We'll give some predictions. We'll talk about how the weekend is now UFC's new biggest weekend of the year. And what should it be called? We're going to talk about that. Plus, a pay-per-view coming up this weekend from pro wrestling. TNA has got a pay-per-view coming the day after the UFC show. We will talk about the Destination X show. What we've got as a lineup, a champion versus champion match, although one of the champions won't be a champion going into the match. We'll talk about Bobby Roode versus Austin Aries, as Austin Aries gives up his X Division title for a shot at the World Heavyweight title. Also, I'm going to talk about the ROH iPay-per-view from this past Sunday night. Didn't have a chance to discuss that, but it was a very important show for Ring of Honor as they had gone 0-3 in internet pay-per-views as a result of some huge technical difficulties with streaming. Did they get it fixed? We're going to talk about that, plus all of the results from the show and how that plays into future shows, including the TV tapings this past week, which Mike Sempervivi actually attended live and had a title change that we're going to talk about as well. So, roll report from Mike Sempervivi here on the program today. We're also going to talk about Raw and SmackDown and Impact and some ratings. Ratings have not been great, and we're going to discuss why. Why have the Impact ratings been down since the show went live and improved as a television product? We'll discuss that. Plus, New Japan, All Japan doing a joint show. We're going to talk about the next Ronda Rousey fight. She is headlining her second big show of 2012 coming up very soon. Charlie Sheen and Raw. What is going on with that relationship and a lot more. We have so much stuff to talk about today. We're going to be back in just a moment after the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. And streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of news to talk about today in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And the big show, not just of the week, but of the year. Probably the most purchased show of the year. That is UFC 148. It is Anderson Silva defending his title against Chael Sonnen for the second time. Of course, in their first meeting, Chael Sonnen beat him unmercifully for 4.5 rounds before falling victim to a triangle. And now he's going to give it another shot at the title. And Anderson Silva is the heavy favorite going into the fight. And before we get anywhere else in this program, before we talk anything more about the weekend and our own Figure Four online convention, which is taking place this weekend as well, Mike, the spotlight is on you. Who is winning Sonnen versus Silva 2?
Yeesh. You know what? It won't matter at all as long as they can even sort of match the first fight. That's the biggest thing here, is unless it's something spectacular, a knockout or a submission or something like that, it's going to be hard for them with all the hype and everything leading into this thing, especially after Anderson Silva's comments this week on the media conference call. It's going to be tough to top the hype, so as long as it's a great fight, I'll be happy. I know that I would love to see Chael Sonnen win this for a variety of reasons, but I'm not betting against Anderson Silva. And I think, I don't know how exactly it's going to happen, but I will say Anderson Silva takes the rematch in less than 5 rounds.
Anderson Silva is actually a pretty heavy favorite going into this fight, despite the fact that Chael laid a beating on him for most of the last fight. Now, you had mentioned that for a variety of reasons, you said you were hoping that Chael Sonnen won. Tell us some of these reasons.
Well, the one big reason is they need they need as much attention as they can get right now with the fact that George St. Pierre is hurt. Anderson Silva is not exactly Mr. Personality when it comes to putting himself out there to press. You know, obviously you have Junior Dos Santos, but you need stars right now. And Chael Sonnen can be the company guy and be the star and be enough of a prick where it does get under Dana's skin, but it's not something that you cannot, you know, bridle down and be able to ride to successes. And Chael Sonnen gives you that. And Anderson Silva gives you that athlete, that incredible, you know, watch this guy, you know, put on an amazing display. But Sonnen would be, and I don't want to say this, but Sonnen would be your Mayweather, to where Silva would be your Manny Pacquiao. Obviously, the incredible display, the international appeal, the legendary status in his home, all of those sorts of things. And even though they're completely different people and completely different fighters, I think you could categorize it that way because you either love Sonnen and you want to see him, you know, completely maul Anderson Silva and be this big mouth Roddy Piper 2012 who can be a front runner for the UFC, or you want to see him get his legs and arms broken and all of his teeth knocked out, which Anderson Silva said he was going to do. So I think for that's the biggest reason alone right there. And I think, you know, everything else is ancillary. I mean, Anderson Silva's been so dominant. I think you get more fights out of Chael Sonnen. And again, it's not that I'm rooting for Sonnen to win or anything like that, but he would give you some options and some different things if he was the one on top. But, you know, but the biggest thing being he's a guy you can put out there and be a star.
You mentioned that Anderson Silva wasn't exactly Mr. Personality in these press deals, but he was this week, in fact. And as you noted, he has vowed to break the arms, break the legs, knock out all of the teeth of Chael Sonnen, and has vowed that Chael will not walk out of the octagon on his own power.
I remember Tully Blanchard cutting promos about Dusty Rhodes, his threats to beat up all of the horsemen, where he said, we're not just going to stand there like stick men, and Dusty Rhodes wants to come break your legs and break your arm, then we'll break your head and do all that. And he said, no, the horsemen are not stick men. And that's kind of what Anderson Silva wants to do to Chael.
Now, Ed Soares was the translator for a conference call that happened earlier this week with Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen, where Anderson got so mad that he threatened to break arms, legs, and I guess kill this poor fella, Chael. And I was told from folks that spoke Portuguese that, in fact, what Anderson Silva said was even worse than what Ed Soares translated. Ed cleaned it up quite a bit before doing the translations. Anderson Silva was very upset, and he walked off of the conference call, as did Chael. So that was certainly a... usually when there's a conference call with Chael Sonnen, Chael steals a show, but not this time. This time, Anderson Silva stole the show. And I guess we'll see what they do with it. The brand new UFC 148 countdown is on the front page of our website right now. It was airing on Fuel. They tried to get a deal where it would air on Fox TV, which would have been huge for the UFC. And Fox ended up deciding they didn't want the show, which is baffling to me, given that there are 24 hours in a day and 7 days before the show. I would think they'd find some sort of time slot to air it in, even if it were 2 o'clock a.m. But they didn't want it, so it aired on Fuel, which almost nobody has. But whether you have Fuel or not, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com. And the full countdown is up on the front page. I just put it up. I have not watched it yet, but I am told it is awesome. So head up and check it out. There's video of both guys watching the first fight and commenting, which is, that sounds exciting, actually, particularly given what happened in the fight. And it's coming up, Mike, and as noted, the odds are heavily in Anderson Silva's favor. And the question to you is, let's say that Chael Sonnen wins his fight, and let's say that it's something where perhaps Anderson Silva beats him up for 4.5 rounds, and in the final 30 seconds, or I don't know what, Chael Sonnen wins the fight. Or let's say maybe it's just a close fight or whatever. Is Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen 3, if Chael Sonnen gets to win, the biggest pay-per-view event in the history of mixed martial arts, beating UFC 100?
I'll steal Bryce Harper's line that Jim Ross seems to be stealing, which is, clown question, bro. Of course it will be. I mean, especially if it goes that way, where Anderson is just beating Chael's ass the entire fight, and Sonnen somehow drops down, gets a takedown, smothers him for a minute and something, you know, he pulls off the victory. If it's anything like that first fight, of course. Even if it's another close fight, you can justify having a third, although there's just no reason that Anderson Silva, if I were him or if I were his manager, Ed Soares, there's no reason I would have this next fight. I mean, I'm surprised that Ed Soares, who's very good at playing heel manager at times, has not brought up the fact that, you know, we're doing a charity event by letting, you know, Sonnen win. I mean, guys win in fights like that all the time in that fashion, and they don't, you know, the guy who loses doesn't get a rematch just because he put on a good show. He lost the title fight. I'm surprised they're not rubbing that in more, or he's not rubbing that in more. So, yeah, I think even, you know, again, if Sonnen wins this, there is absolutely no doubt, because who does your only other option is GSP. You know, even Lesnar and whoever, Dos Santos, if he decided to come back, I don't think would be as big as a third fight between these two because of the dynamic, the fact they hate each other. And if it's even slightly a good fight, if Sonnen wins, you definitely got to come back out. I mean, if he wins by a quick knockout or you know, just something bizarre like that, you have even more of a reason to bring it back because, you know, you say it was a fluke or something like that. It's way too easy.
What are your Todd's odds that if Chael Sonnen wins, the very first thing he says is, I'll never give Silva a rematch? Now, granted, the man doesn't call the shots, but I figure that's the first thing he's going to say.
Well, if he's going to go heel, I mean, I can see that, absolutely. I can absolutely see that. I don't know the Todd's odds. Let's see. I will say a solid 50% chance.
Solid.
Because there's just as much of a 50% chance as he says just something else insulting about Anderson Silva.
Is 50% solid? I'm not sure exactly how these odds work.
It's a flip of the coin. I mean, if he doesn't say that, he'll say something else.
All right, we're going to talk more about Silva versus Sonnen when we come back from the break. We'll also talk about the rest of the card. Forrest Griffin and Tito Ortiz is the semi-main event in Tito Ortiz's retirement fight. And there's six fights on this particular show. We'll get into all those when we come back from the break, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking UFC 148, Sonnen versus Silva. It's coming up this weekend, Las Vegas, Nevada. I shall be there in attendance live. It is, in fact, our Wrestling Observer Figure 4 Weekly Annual Convention Weekend in Las Vegas. We'll have nearly 100 people coming from all over the world to celebrate with us. I have been told that the official Twitter hashtag of the weekend is hashtag F4WCon. And I know that there are a number of people that are already tweeting about the convention. In fact, myself as well. I've been in heavy training for this weekend, and yesterday I had what they call a refeed day. I actually just ate everything I could find, and I tweeted my results, if you want to call them that. It's up at Brian Alvarez on Twitter, if you want to see how much food a man can put into his body in one day without dying. I was disappointed in my own performance yesterday in terms of eating, but it's still all up there right now. You can go up there and check it out, and I will be tweeting live from Vegas all weekend at Brian Alvarez, and of course you can follow along with hashtag F4WCon. We'll talk about that a little bit more here on the show. Should be a fun time, a lot of excitement. We're going to be going to some shows. We've got an annual dinner. I'm sure there will be some drinking and debauchery, not involving myself, of course, but others. And, Mike, when are you heading out for one of our annual conventions? What's taking you so long?
The fact that I actually always have business to take care of that weekend, unfortunately, when it comes to the 4th of July, a busy time where I am, so I never get a chance to make the visit out there. But if this becomes a big enough event, you know, boxing matches, there tend to be two every year, and it's kind of been on, like, Cinco de Mayo now, and then it's usually around September 13th, 17th, 15th or so. Usually that Saturday, that weekend, there tends to be a big boxing show that takes place. So maybe the F4WCon can get bigger and bigger, where we actually have two events every year, and maybe one in, you know, Vegas and one in New York or something like that, to surround a East Coast fight.
Well, actually, we do. One is the WrestleMania weekend. We're going to have the WrestleMania weekend and the UFC WrestleMania weekend. So one is going to be July 4th weekend every year in Vegas. And obviously, they're not using the name WrestleMania, but that is the idea. That is going to be their WrestleMania weekend, is
July 4th.
Will
that be the F4W hashtag for that weekend?
It could be. Well, no, we're still hashtag F4WCon. But the point is, we have an annual get-together over the biggest weekend of the year for wrestling, which is WrestleMania weekend. We're all going to New Jersey come 2013. And we're going to have a get-together over the UFC's biggest weekend of the year. And that is the plan for July 4th weekend. UFC is going to try to build it around a giant fight. What that fight is every year, I don't know. My personal recommendation would be to do kind of what they did with this show, which is book three or four big fights on the card and hope that none of them fall through. If one of them falls through, you've still got three more. If two of them fall through, you've still got two more. If they all fall through, I don't know what to tell you, but it's going to happen one of these years. But still,
I think they need to, they can do that too. There's ways to do that, and I think they need to tweak what they're doing now with maybe run a Fox show leading into that, where if something happens, and then, you know, get the latest available Saturday you can for the month after in August. Get the latest Saturday you can that's not booked up by TNA or WWE to give yourself some leeway in that time, because I got to be honest, follow this stuff so much, it was almost like it became the unofficial convention. This was going to be their WrestleMania every year. It was their new Super Saturday in January before the Super Bowl. It used to be a very key show for them. But it looks like July was going to be it, and in Vegas every year. And it seemed like the unofficial the UFC mega WrestleMania-style weekend as it was. So I think now that they're official about it and they're going to do so many things and have pool parties and really push the convention in the whole nine yards, they need to give themselves flexibility leading into this because, again, they don't have enough stars and they run enough shows where everything is spread out way too thin. They need to protect themselves badly going into that show if they really want to do this year after year, which is a good idea.
Well, let me give you some ideas here. First off, what they need to do, in my opinion, is not run a show 4 weeks before and 4 weeks after. And I realize that with the schedule they've got, the idea of running one show in 2 months sounds ridiculous. And maybe it is. But the reason that this show fell apart is because they had so many shows leading up to it, and they had so many shows immediately following it. And when people got injured and matches fell apart, they ended up taking guys from this show, this mega show, and farming them out to other shows, which, of course, as we've talked about in past weeks, led to a lot of disappointment for people that spent $1,200 on tickets only to see the card look, I don't want to say nothing like it was when they bought their tickets, but they lost some big matches, including the Uriah Faber title fight. Now, if you can arrange your schedule so that this show sits in the middle of a glut of pay-per-views or an absence of pay-per-views, if you can arrange your show such, then I think that not only are you going to lower the risk of having to move fighters off the show, but it's going to make the show feel like a significantly more important event. There hasn't been a UFC in 4 weeks. There's not going to be another UFC for another 4 weeks. We've got to get this show. You get your friends together. It's July 4th weekend. They all come over and barbecue. I think just having a mega event sandwiched between two events that are a month apart each, that guarantees a much bigger than average buy rate. I also believe that if you've got a show that is in the middle of nowhere, meaning no show a month prior or no show within, you know, several weeks, no show several weeks after, if it's just the only show in a 2 month period, I think that because it's the mega show of the year, because you're not going to have to worry about farming out talent, because it's probably going to do the biggest buy rate of each year given the main event and how much you stack the card, I think it will actually, I think that part of the problem, as I've said before, with the injury rate, is that now the guys are insured. against injuries and training. They weren't before. This is a new deal within the last year or two. Now, as a result of that, let's say that I get hurt doing this show. Let's say I'm a fighter and I'm doing this show and a boom mic falls on my head and I suffer a concussion. So I pull out of, I shouldn't even say a concussion. Let's say that I injure my arm. So I'm going to pull out of that fight because UFC is going to cover it. In the old days, when they didn't cover an injury that occurred outside of a fight, what I would do is I would hide the injury. I would go into the fight and win or lose, I would claim I hurt my arm during the fight. And then UFC would cover it because they covered injuries that happened during fights. So now that you get coverage for injuries that happen in training, I think that you're seeing more and more guys pulling out of fights. Now, if you've got the biggest show of the year on the July 4th weekend, and you know it's going to do the biggest buy rate of the year, there is an incentive to not pull out of the fight due to injury because you're going to miss out on the biggest pay-per-view cut of the year. It's not just the main eventers that get a cut of the pay-per-view. It's the undercard fighters as well. The semi-main event fighters. Tito Ortiz is certainly going to get a cut of the pay-per-view. Forrest Griffin is certainly going to get a cut of the pay-per-view. Probably a couple of other guys on the show as well, some of the bigger names. So if you know that if you pull out of this big mega fight, you're not only going to miss out on your payoff, but a big percentage cut because it's the biggest show of the year, that's going to encourage you to maybe train a little smarter, maybe ensure that you're not going to get hurt going to the fight. I just think that there are a lot of benefits to having a big mega show of the year. You got to remember on this show, only one person pulled out of this show due to injury, and that was Dominic Cruz. Every other fight that fell apart was because they had to be farmed out to other shows that were taking place before or after this event. So I think having a mega show sandwiched in the middle of a two-month period, the only show billed as the biggest show of the year, I think it can work out pretty well, actually.
Well, I agree with you to a point. I don't think it's the number of shows per se, but I would definitely not have a pay-per-view in June. And if you think about it, we had the Ultimate Fighter Finals Brazil, and they're going to do several Ultimate Fighters. So if you have that show, which legitimately, if you take the main event off that show, and you take Verdum's return, even if you have Verdum's return, you know, considering who he was fighting and how the fight turned out, not being a surprise to anyone, there's your fuel show. If you have to have another show, you have a FX-level show, you know, with a relatively deep undercard that you could shuffle some guys around to. But, yeah, you try to schedule guys so when it gets to be July, this is the big pay-per-view. And then afterwards, again, they're not going to donk off too many pay-per-views. And the cable industry will shiver if they start doing that. So they can't take away that one. But if you make it as late as humanly possible and you raise the price of this show, knowing that there's going to be somewhat of a hangover for that August show, and again, you can do that. You know, fans, whether they like it or not, are going to be used to that. WrestleMania does it. They're talking about, you know, obviously we talked about it, the possibilities of a $99.99 high-definition pay-per-view for Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather is, you know, kind of epic to think about. So if the UFC raises theirs $10, and because there's not a show for a two-month span, that can actually make a lot of sense. So I don't even think it's the number of shows as much as far as, you know, being more intelligent about how they book some of these shows, because they put some guys on Fuel that I never would have put on there and put some guys on Fox that I also wouldn't have put on there.
I think you can easily get $64.95 for HD for the biggest UFC event of the year over July 4th weekend. I think that's
absolutely
easy. Now, my question to you is, now that Manny Pacquiao has been defeated, can you still get $99.95 for a Mayweather-Pacquiao fight?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. With how it would be built up and the corporate sponsorship and the, I mean, absolutely, with everything involved in it, because if you look back at De La Hoya and Mayweather and the time of it and the support they got from business and other outside industries, in hindsight, it is more believable of why they got the number they did, even though it was impressive. But it's going to be the same way with Mayweather and Pacquiao. It's just too easy.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the UFC 148 card. We got a lot of other news to talk about today as well, so stay tuned. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and MMA, you can head every day to WrestlingObserver.com. That is our website. We do daily news updates. We have TV show reviews, and we have a million radio shows. We do radio shows every single day up at WrestlingObserver.com, sometimes multiple times per day. A couple of weeks ago, I did 5 shows in a single Thursday. We cover the news. We talk to the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Bruno Sammartino has been on the show. Ric Flair has been on the show. Mick Foley. Daniel Bryan. The list goes on and on. All of these shows are archived for you if you sign up. It is $10.95 per month. That is it. You can sign up one time, and if you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But I think if you sign up, you'll sign up for a recurring subscription where we bill you every single month. You not only get all of the new shows, but every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. You can head up to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page. It is a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. You can download them, their MP3 files, listen to them, and if you like what you hear, just think, tens of thousands of hours of audio will be at your fingertips for just $10.95 per month. So, that is where to go if you only get to hear the show one time per week and you think to yourself on Monday, man, I wish it was a Wrestling Observer Live today. Guess what? There is! You just have to sign up for it. $10.99. Check it out. WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking about UFC 148 here. Sonnen versus Silva with my partner in crime, Mike Sempervivi. And the semi-main event is Tito Ortiz in his retirement fight against, another legend of the sport, Forrest Griffin. And if you had to pick a winner here, who is your pick, Mike?
Forrest Griffin.
You're not alone.
This isn't it, or not everybody wins their final exit match. And, you know, for Tito Ortiz with his back and for the time he's put in, it actually legitimately feels that way. I know he could pop back up like a Muppet at a Indian casino resort one day in California or something like that, but I tend to doubt it. And I think I would assume he's got the money saved up enough. And Forrest Griffin, again, Tito Ortiz will have a good burst early, but I cannot see Forrest Griffin letting himself get caught. And as great as Tito Ortiz, you know, was able to kind of put a nice stamp at the end of his career, and he really did with the effort he had choking out Bader, and then, you know, on short notice going out there against a Rashad Evans who looked like, you know, a zillion dollars that night in Philadelphia. It was great, but now I believe it's going to be over, and Franklin stops him. I don't know how. It's probably going to be ground and pound where the referee calls it off. But
Forrest,
I'm sorry. But so it's, you know, that I'm going with Forrest Griffin by technical knockout again, probably with, I'll say, third round.
Franklin was supposed to face Kung Lee, but they had to move Franklin to Brazil for the UFC Brazil show. He, of course, as we noted last week, defeated Wanderlei Silva, and he was scheduled here to face Kung Lee. Kung Lee now facing Patrick Cote. And as a fan, nothing against Patrick Cote or anything, but I'm disappointed in the switch-up. I was excited for Rich Franklin and Kung Lee, but what can you do?
We'll see. As kind of a Kung Lee fan, and I've had a chance to see him do, like, you know, the Sancho competitions on the old K1 pay-per-views, and they did a great job protecting him and featuring him in those bouts and getting him built up. And creating this aura around him, and he did, you know, grab the ball when he went to K1, and now in the UFC with the great fight he had against Wanderlei Silva. I like this fight a lot more for him. I hope there's still a little bit left for him in the UFC, because again, he's a guy I think right now that they could use to, you know, with his looks and his personality and the whole nine yards. He's a guy who it would probably be in their best interest if he wins this fight, and I think he's got a much better shot. I was going to take Franklin if they had squared off, but I'm actually going to take Kung Lee in this.
One other fight I wanted to ask you about. It is Cody McKenzie's fight with Chad Mendez. Chad Mendes is coming off a knockout loss. 4 minutes and 59 seconds of the first round at UFC Brazil, UFC 142. Lost to Jose Aldo in a title fight. And aside from that loss, he has never been beaten or submitted. Now, Cody McKenzie has, for lack of a better term, a gimmick. He's got a finishing move, that being his guillotine. At one point, I believe he won something like 12 fights in a row with a guillotine, and he won his last fight, UFC on Fuel, the Korean Zombie Poirier fight. He won that fight. Marcus Levasseur, he beat him with a guillotine. Now, the big question, will Chad Mendes fall victim to the guillotine, or is he beating Cody McKenzie?
He is beating Cody McKenzie. And, you know, Eve Edwards actually beat Cody McKenzie. Chad Mendes got beat by Jose Aldo, who, you know, hey, he beats everybody. So I've been a big fan of Mendes, and I'm still on his bandwagon right now going into this fight against McKenzie. And again, I know it is great that he's got a gimmick. I know, Phil Davis is also going to get a great gimmick, and the fact that he's got a move, and there's a couple guys like that, and it is, you know, kind of awesome to have those dudes like that. But unfortunately for Mr. McKenzie, I don't see him stopping Chad Mendes.
I actually haven't seen any odds for that particular fight, but looks like there aren't any right now. How about that? We do have odds for the main fights. Let me go over some of these very quickly. These, of course, can change rapidly. So for the main event,
when fight type comes.
That's right. Main event, Anderson Silva is a favorite over Chael Sonnen. These particular odds, minus 270, Anderson Silva, plus 230 for Chael Sonnen. And Tito Ortiz, Forrest Griffin, Forrest minus 320. Tito Ortiz plus 260. So that is the those are the odds for that particular battle there. And also interesting when looking at these odds, they've got the odds up for the Uriah Faber fight that, of course, is coming up against Henan Barao at the, it's supposed to be at UFC 148. It is now in Calgary. But these odds here have it listed as minus 170 for Henan Barao, plus 150 for Uriah Faber. What are your thoughts on those particular odds?
Yeah, I'm surprised Barao's not a little bit more of a favorite, to be honest. Although I think I have a feeling, you know, that's going to be one of those two where a lot of betting will come in on Faber towards the end, and people will be, you know, again, I don't want to generalize here, but lots of times when it comes to people betting on fights late, you know, some people are waiting on where the action moves and things like that, but a lot of people tend to bet on the guy that they know. They either bet on the heavy underdog because they're looking for, you know, a quick payday in the hope that way, or they bet on somebody that they know, and they tend to bet them up too much because they remember what they used to do. And it's not like, you know, Uriah Faber's a broken down old man or anything like that, but I think Henan Barao has been on the far better streak leading into this, and I've been, you know, again, I love Faber, and I love what he's, you know, can be for the UFC and be for the sport and be in semifinal positions most of the time, and being a guy who's great to have on a card, especially on the West Coast in California. But I just, again, Barao has been so dominant. Again, you know, this is a good. It was good for Ivan Menavar. I mean, because he was the one who was supposed to face Barao, and now he's in a far better position because I think he's got a far easier fight going into this.
If Henan Barao beats Uriah Faber, do you expect us to ever see a Uriah Faber title match again?
Yes, because Faber can still beat. I'm not saying he's like Kenny Florian or anything like that, where he's going to, you know, yes, he'll have trouble being the top guy, but you'll put him on there against, you know, somebody else. I know, pick a guy, a Cub Swan, I don't know, pick someone, and he's probably going to beat them. It's not like he is decrepit or has too many injuries or anything like that. He can still beat most guys, and I think after a while, after a few fights, they may run out of an option, or if you go have a guy that goes on a run, yeah, I mean, at least you know there's people that care about Faber, and until his TV ratings drop or he is shown for that people don't care about him, you know, he's still one of the guys they have who elicit a reaction and have a little bit of crossover appeal. So, yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
While we're on the subject, coming up in August, it is the Sarah Kaufman-Ronda Rousey fight. And this will be the second fight of 2012 that Ronda Rousey, the second fight card that she has headlined. It is taking place in San Diego, August 18th. It's going to be broadcast on Showtime. And interestingly enough, the odds, courtesy of BetUS, have Ronda Rousey not only listed as the favorite, but she is a minus 600 favorite. 6-1 odds of beating Sarah Kaufman, who's a very tough opponent. Are you surprised by these odds, Mike?
Yes. Actually, a little bit I am, because but then again, I don't know. The fight was just announced. I don't know if you could see on there what it opened at, and to see if it has moved, if she opened it like plus 1,000, which I would never be able to believe. But yeah, I think at plus 600, I would roll the dice right now. I would wait to see which way it moves. If it drops to 550, maybe I hold off. But if it goes up to 650 or stands pat at 600 for a while, why would you not put 50 or 100 bucks on that? Just for the simple reason, as great as Rousey has been and as dynamic as she has been, again, yes, she's probably going to win the fight, but is she a 6-1 favorite or larger to do that? I don't know. I mean, those are odds that are usually, you know, the only other woman to have odds like that has been Cyborg. So, again, with Kaufman's experience, she is a really good fighter. Rousey is much bigger, and she's got the public's imagination right now. But I if that stands pat for a little while or goes up, I would definitely, that's something I would think people would jump on. And it's also going to be a line that moves dramatically the day of the fight if it hovers around that, because there will be people going, you know, what's 50 or 100 bucks to take the chance to win 350 or 600? So I am a little surprised that it's up that high. But again, it's been a couple days, and if it hasn't moved, they may be right.
I would be baffled if they were still at minus 600 plus 400 on fight day. In fact, I'd be baffled if they were still here in like 2 weeks. But I guess we'll follow this and check it out. Is your prediction for the fight that Rousey's going to armbar in a minute?
I don't say a minute, but yeah, I think she's going to armbar. Call me a sucker, and I'm a big Sarah Kaufman fan, but again, Rousey's size and what she's got going for, and the fact that, you know, like a puppy with big paws that has already gotten real big real fast, and again, the only thing that's going to hurt her, because she is so sharp, is overconfident, and it's going to be getting caught by something. And I just, as good of a fight as this could be, I just don't think Kaufman's going to be able to withstand Rousey for, you know, an extended period of time. And again, unless, you know, she stays away from her or Rousey gets tired or something like that. But I cannot fathom that happening. So, again, I'm riding the Ronda Rousey bandwagon, and hopefully Judo Jean LaBelle is there with the stopwatch.
Well, I know that she's training with the Diaz brothers, and they've got her running, and she hates running. But they're triathlon athletes, and so they're getting her out there on the pavement. And I, suffice to say, don't think that I think she's probably training very hard at avoiding getting hit, because they're probably trying to hit her a lot. And I don't think her cardio is going to be in question. But we'll see.
No contact, Buzz, please.
We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to start talking pro wrestling in hour two, and one quick thing to note is that the 1,000th episode of Raw is coming up on July 23rd. Just a few weeks from now, that is when Raw permanently goes to 3 hours live, or at least permanently for the next 6 months or so. We'll see how long it lasts. But signed as the, what do they call it? The celebrity social media something or other? Charlie Sheen is going to be live tweeting during the show. They kind of built it up like he was going to be on the show, but that's not going to happen. He's going to be, you know, in a hot tub somewhere, doing whatever Charlie Sheen does in the hot tub, and tweeting his thoughts on Raw, or maybe he'll just have it as, I don't know what's going to happen. But what are your thoughts on this social media Charlie Sheen tweeting gimmick?
I think his publicist is going to do it. I think somebody else is going to do it most of the time. I don't know how big of a professional wrestling fan Charlie Sheen is, but he has got a show to pimp and anger management. Not like it needs WWE's help, but it's probably a show that he's thinking could go hand-in-hand without audience. So it's not a bad idea for him to get out there and do it because, again, much like voting on college football's top 25 or a lot of these things, when it's faceless and there's no direct tie-in, how the hell do you know that he's doing it anyway? And for WWE, it gets them attention. I know they're PG in the whole nine yards there, and I don't see Charlie Sheen. I see a lot of innuendo and things like that to get over people's heads. So I guess if you're going to do it, I guess why not? I wouldn't do it, but hey, I'm not WWE.
Do you expect this to be,
for that matter?
Do you expect this to be a PG Twitter feed that evening?
I would assume so, yeah. I would just say
really?
It's a lot of innuendo and you know, end-around jokes.
I think it's going to be a disaster. But we'll talk about this when we come back from the break. And more pro wrestling news in hour two. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We talked a lot of mixed martial arts in Hour 1. And as noted, I am going to be in Las Vegas, Nevada. 116 degrees or something like that. But I'm going to be there next week, this coming week actually, for not only the Figure 4 Online Wrestling Observer Annual Convention, but the UFC 148 weekend as well, Sonnen versus Silva. Mike Sempervivi is not going to be heading to the convention. He is not a world traveler yet, but he did travel to the ROH television tapings a couple of days ago. And Mike, we're going to talk about that more when we come back from the break. But very quickly, I heard there was a pretty good turnout of listeners at that show. Is that correct?
Yes, there was. I know there were several there that knew the show. And of course, I'm sure they were drawn there to see former WCW and WWE superstar, but really more known as F4W radio personality Lance Storm. I have a feeling many of them came for that. But Todd Martin was there. I got a chance to see him. I didn't see Victor Sosa, but he does the Wrestling Weekly show with Les Thatcher every Saturday, which invited back Doc Young this week.
That's right.
I know he was there. So, you know, yes, a good turnout for the and again, Baltimore and Washington, traditionally good wrestling markets, so perfect fit.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about that show. Was this the show with the title change?
Yes, it was.
All right. That title change actually is on the front page right now. May as well spoil it. Adam Cole is the new ROH TV champion. He beat Roderick Strong with a cross-arm German suplex. You can check out the highlights and some backstage video of the event up at the front page of WrestlingObserver.com right now. We're going to get Mike's first-person report of the event when we come back from the break. Always exciting, a road report here on the show. So, that's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour, pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And before we go to Mike and his road report for the ROH television tapings this past week, wanted to bring something to everyone's attention, that being that a lot of people have said a lot of things about Nick Diaz and marijuana and mixed martial arts and Nick being suspended for a year for failing a test. I just want to read this from USA Today. Wrestler Stephanie Lee has tested positive for marijuana and will not be a part of the U.S. Olympic team in London. The U.S. Anti-Doping Agency announced Thursday night that she has been banned for 1 year after testing positive for a marijuana metabolite in a sample collected April 21st at the Olympic trials in Iowa City, Iowa. 1 year suspension and banished from the Olympics for marijuana. So, I guess not necessarily all that bad for Nick Diaz, really.
Yeah, especially because her, she could face a extended international ban of 2 years for you. I know for performance enhancers, or the ones they consider that way, you can get an international ban from competition. And look, besides, for women right now, I mean, yes, women's MMA is growing, but if you're a pure wrestler, which, you know, a lot of girls in Japan, believe it or not, are, who have basically been, you know, mostly dominant when it comes to international competition in female wrestling, what else are you going to do? So very dumb in the fact that I know people get away with a lot in the Olympics just the same way they do everywhere else, but it's really dumb for an athlete to do that and have any possibility of screwing something up leading into the Olympic Games. And it just, and again, now, should it be something that they test for? I don't know. Look, they test for things in cold medicines and things like that. So they wanting to do it as stringent as humanly possible, even though people get through, I guess that's a good idea. But again, I don't know, as far as, you know, amateur wrestling goes, really, is marijuana something that should be tested for? But if you're going to do it, I guess you got to do it across the board.
Joe Warren was likely to make the 2008 Olympic team, and he was suspended for 2 years and booted from the Olympics for failing a pot test.
That killed his amateur career, realistically, because he came out and was trying to do both things and got obliterated and still showed up for the Olympic trials this year. And again, he was one of the shining lights of Olympic wrestling because of his personality. And again, it's not like he would have been to the level of star he is when it comes to Bellator today. But with that said, he could have been a shining light for the United States Olympic team, and he missed that chance in a time where he looked to actually medal. And it's, you know, any more in international competition, those are becoming fewer and far between when it comes to American wrestlers.
All right, let's talk about your road report to the ROH television tapings. How was it?
It was great, and having a chance to see some people and meet some people. I'd never met Lance Storm before, so I got a chance to meet Lance, and Lance was actually there before the show, and that was Friday nights. Unfortunately, they have to do this because of events at DuBurns Arena. Friday night is not a good night to have that show in Baltimore, especially when there's a rock concert in town. And again, that was not that huge and was probably pulling a different audience, but with the Orioles in town and it happening to be about 175,000 degrees in Baltimore City that day, it's rough for them. And they're set up to do Fridays. And again, it starts so early as well, too, which does not help. Doors open at 5:30. The show starts at 6:30, and they pretty much begin taping at 7. If they could push that back, that would be a little bit better off, too. But outside of that, Lance was there, and he got a chance to meet Rocco Abruzzi, who Northeast wrestler who got squashed by Rhino. And with a name like Rocco Abruzzi, where he takes the name of Bruno Sammartino's hometown, it disappointed me that in his tricolor goatee, he did not have the flag of Italy in there to support the Italian soccer team, which got beat up by Spain today. But
a tricolor goatee?
How great would that be? Well, yeah, you know how, like, guys, you know, they'll color their goatees and it starts to grow out, and they got, you know, like three different colors
I
in there.
See.
Like that, he should have had the Italian flag. But
sure,
that wasn't the focus of the show, other than the fact that people love Rhino. And Rhino and Elgin actually teamed up on the Pittsburgh show, and that's actually a tag team that, you know, obviously they're teasing Elgin going face or having issues with the House of Truth, which Rhino is a part of. But, you know, them as a tag team facing off against the world's greatest tag team wouldn't have actually hurt my feelings at some point, even though they're not going to go that direction. The biggest news in the night was the fact that, you know, here's a spoiler, everybody, but Ring of Honor has also put it out there, so it's not that big of a deal. Adam Cole wins the ROH TV title by beating Roderick Strong in a really good match. On the first week of tapings on the show, it began with Mike Bennett and Brutal Bob against Eddie Edwards and Cole, and what was a really good match there, too, which gave the introduction to, and again, avert hearing this, everybody, if you don't want to be spoiled, the return of Sarah Del Rey to come out and thwart Maria's attempts to use the boot to knock guys out with. It came and happened later on in the match with Lance Storm and Mike Bennett, where she came out as the neutralizer again there. So that was a surprise, and the crowd reacted well to that, knew exactly who she was, so they were happy about that. They were also happy in the fact that Eddie Kingston actually came out and made the save for Mike Mondo against Kevin Steen in what was actually a really entertaining bout. Mondo is the perfect guy to knock heads with Steen right now, and having the short kind of match that Steen needs to have. He can play to that, and he can bounce around and be just as manic as Kevin Steen, you know, goes and does his thing. There was a point where I guess Kevin Steen and The Rock really are good buddies, because at one point Kevin Steen took the microphone and started doing running commentary against Mike Mondo, and which ended up having some really funny spots with both of them and Jimmy Jacobs. But the big thing was the re-debut of Eddie Kingston, who was most known for being in Chikara, and again, along with Artie Evans and some of the other guys that they've been able to get, they've been able to pluck from Chikara and actually, you know, have some guys do some good things. So it looks like Eddie Kingston's going to get a title shot in August at a house show coming up here against Kevin Steen. But that match with he and Mondo were really fun, and up and down the whole thing. And July looks to actually be a really fun, you know, set of TV. And if you go to the website right now and go to the front page, the Adam Cole fan cam footage that they took from someone, they spliced it together with some other stuff and him going backstage and then cutting a promo. It was a really good night for him, and it makes a lot of sense, because I would figure down the line with how this is working, and I'm not a huge fan of Kevin Steen as the champion, but I understand it, and there are guys that you have like Kingston, like Mondo, who they can bump up against him and give him the best matches they can. I would assume this is leading down the line to he and Michael Elgin, once Michael Elgin finally probably full-time turns babyface, which, again, they kept teasing throughout this upcoming month's TV. So I can see it ending with he and Elgin, but, you know, until getting to that point, again, I don't know. I lost my train of thought there, too.
Steen.
Oh, Steen. No, and Adam Cole. Adam Cole is the other guy outside of the only other guy outside of Elgin I could see wanting to win the title, but there's no reason for him to. And the fact that he has the TV title now, if he actually defends it on TV every week, that's what they need, because Adam Cole, obviously, after the match he had at the iPay-per-view and the fact that they haven't been using him that much, he is the guy that's actually going to be the front runner for that promotion. He looks good. He wrestles great matches. People actually really love him. And the fact that he's got the TV title, they need him on TV every week, and he should really be the focal point of the promotion going forward. And it looks like, you know, if he's got some help so he gets more comfortable in his role, in his promos, the in-ring work is pretty much there. The fan support is there. So give Elgin the title later on down the line with Steen, and I think this is a good move with Cole if he's going to be on TV every week.
I heard that in the big markets, Steen is over huge as a babyface, and in the smaller markets, he's over big as a heel. I presume Baltimore is a bigger market, so big babyface?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because the surprise was Mondo actually carving out a 50-50 reaction at times, or at least 60-40 with the way his character is.
We're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking Mike's road report, his trip to the ROH TV tapings in Baltimore a couple of days ago, and apparently a fun time. How was the attendance for the show, Mike?
The attendance was good. I've only been to one other taping. I didn't get a chance to go last month, but I did have a chance to go, I believe it was in March, and this was much better. The crowd was really you know, jacked up and pretty hot. And, you know, they go over the top too much with the WWE chants, especially when it comes to the world's greatest tag team. And there is something low rent when tag teams doing a face-off against ANX in the ring, and ANX needs all the support they can get. You know, they're much improved. But they still need to be babied along a little bit. And when you're having all the yes, yes chants and a lot of, you know, Shelton, where's your mama? And they come out and say, you know, wrong promotion, jackasses. It's like, you know, don't put any, you know, shine onto the WWE. And that's a little annoying from the crowd. But they were a hot crowd. You could tell most of them, if not all of them, probably purchased the iPay-per-view or at least had a chance to view it. They knew Kingston and had an Eddie chant right off the bat when it came to him. Many of them knew who Mike Seidel was, who I don't think he's been in ROH for a while. I think he's made a couple appearances there, but he came out and it's like, you know, the initial hit of like, did Brian Pillman reincarnate just come out with the blonde hair and the vest and the curly hair and the look and all that stuff? But he was there and people actually knew who he was. So it was a smart crowd and it was a crowd that was jacked up and they like being part of the action, the regulars that they do get there week after week. So it was a really good crowd, and again, they were fired up, and seemingly all of them had a chance to at least be familiar with what happened on the iPay-per-view.
So how was Lance?
Lance was great, and you know, he had the rubber match against Mike Bennett, and I don't know, I sent you the promo that Lance cut afterwards. I don't know if that's going to be on TV or not, or if they had ended it with what happened, and again, to spoil that, unfortunately, for all of you out there who are big Lance Storm fans, he ended up losing to Mike Bennett, unfortunately for all of you, because of Maria's interference and a steel chair, unfortunately. But that led also to Sarah Del Rey coming out and attacking Maria again when Maria tried to take off her boot, and as Lance was being held by Brutal Bob and Mike Bennett, he was about to get smacked upside the head with Maria's silver boot. But Sarah Del Rey came out, made the save, helped Lance up to his feet, and he saluted the crowd and cut a promo afterwards just saying he is a man of his word. And he said, this is going to be the last one. Now he put the mic down and rolled out of the ring, selling his nasty injuries that he suffered by Mike Bennett, but did not take his boots off and leave them there. So much like Terry Funk and everybody else in professional wrestling, I'm not believing that Lance Storm is done.
Now, when I first got the results, I thought, well, they're obviously setting up for Lance and Sarah Del Rey against Mike Bennett and Maria in a mixed tag match, but I actually don't think that's going to happen. I don't know if this is the end of Lance's career. I guess we'll talk to him on the show coming up in, I think it's actually next week he will be on the program again. But we'll find out what the deal is. But I know that he has no more booking scheduled at this point, so we'll see what that means.
Yeah, he's been banged up a little bit. And this is, you know, this is why I know a lot of ROH fans don't like Mike Bennett, but what Mike Bennett affords you the possibility of is things like this, like this three-match series that he ended up having with Lance Storm. It allows for that to happen, and it seemed to be from the first run-in where, again, a lot of the focus was obviously on Adam Cole, to get him back into a fierier mix and to have him coming off Kyle O'Reilly, who, by the way, also had a really good match against Matt Taven, who I can just see him being scooped up by the WWE at some point, sooner rather than later, Taven that is. But O'Reilly, who really, I mean, Cole is good. I think people kind of forgot about him and put him to the side because ROH kind of did that. It's kind of what they're doing to the Briscoes now. They're just kind of spinning wheels while some other things are going on. So as impressive as Cole was last Sunday at the iPay-per-view, I think Kyle O'Reilly was even more impressive, and he had a really good match with Matt Taven. Cut a promo before that match, which I think is going to end on or air in the fourth week of the month, the 28th. But that was a really good one, too. So, again, they had a good night. Haas and Benjamin, who people absolutely abhor, especially Charlie Haas, that crowd absolutely hates them. Destroyed the All Night Express, and this continues on. I think Charlie Haas had a match against Rhett Titus last night to play it into this, but destroyed him with chairs. So those are two guys who people absolutely positively love to hate.
Love to hate or just hate?
When it comes to Charlie Haas, I think it really is hate. And I'm not saying it's almost comical, though, for those people who don't hate Charlie Haas, who are there. It's like 50% like to boo him because he's a heel and he gets so jacked up and he gets in everybody's face and everything. But I think there's another 50% that, like, legitimately, it's not go away heat. It's I wish I could just punch you in the face heat. And I honest to God, I don't know why he elicits that reaction. I think Benjamin is much better to pull off that type of reaction. But it's almost like people have no problem with Benjamin, and they love booing him and riding him, but they just, some people just hate Charlie Haas.
For those of you that watched the ROHI pay-per-view last week, there was a Kevin Steen promo, post-match promo, and he was talking about how you guys always turn on the champion. You always turn on the champion, and someday, I think what he essentially said was, you can't turn on me because I hate you. But, of course, he was cheered wildly, and everybody was going nuts for him, and you mentioned they go nuts for him on this show here. And the deal is, they believe that, in fact, at some point, the fans are going to turn on Kevin Steen. And they believe that at some point, a babyface is going to come around that the fans love more than Kevin Steen, and that person eventually will save Ring of Honor from this reign of terror. Now, having attended the house show this coming this past week, did you see that man that someday will be an even bigger babyface than Kevin Steen?
I give ROH a little bit more credit in that I think, you know, Cornette knew the reaction he was going to get in New York. I think it's just going through the motions, and I think it's very simple with Kevin Steen. People are just, he's kind of Mr. ROH. He's kind of like that guy, their Tommy Dreamer, that kind of guy who's just, you can't see him going anywhere else. You doubt he's going to go anywhere else. He's a, you know, he's a hold on to a different era, and he's just kind of their guy. And I think when you set him up with Kingston, who can be a brawler, and it doesn't matter who gets cheered, when you put him in there with Mondo, where people are responding back and forth, I think they're just happy to see Kevin Steen, that fan base. They're just happy to see him kick somebody's ass. And I think in the next two title matches he has coming up, because, you know, he has the one with Mondo on TV. I can see another one happening after this. And he's got, he's got Kingston coming up. And odds are he's going to have Elgin down the line, who, again, it's two bears beating each other up. It's like watching Gordy and One Man Gang or Bundy and Kamala back in the day. You just want to see two dudes just slam into each other at high speed. So until you get to Adam Cole, if that's the direction that you want to go with Cole defeating Steen, that's the only guy I think that really is over the top standing out and someone that people can truly believe is the one to carry ROH, you know, and end this reign of terror, because who else is it going to be? You know, the best guys they have, you know, the Briscoes, obviously not. It's a singles title. Mike Ben.
Oh, my God. I believe we've lost Mike Sempervivi. Maybe someone from, Kevin Steen cut his line. All right, hold on, everybody. Let me get him back here on the line. That was odd. Mike, you there?
Yes, I am here.
Kevin Steen cut your phone line when you were talking about men who could beat him.
He's an evil man. If I started using some of the words that Kevin Steen uses, I would be cut off from the radio. But, I'm not sure where that cut out there. But, look, Kevin Steen, you know, when you have him against Eddie Kingston, you know, it can re-listen, you can elicit both reactions, no problem. Him against Mike Mondo, no problem the same way. The only force that's going to stop him, who the fans can really rally behind, I think, boo Kevin Steen. And realistically, they don't have to boo Kevin Steen. But the guy is Jimmy Jacobs. Or, I'm sorry, the guy is Adam Cole. And you can have Cole and Carino and Cole and Jacobs and leading into it, where you can get as much people to be, if that's going to be the guy, if they're going to boo anybody, or you can make them boo Steen against anybody, the only guy I can think of is Adam Cole. Who else is it going to be?
All right, let's talk a little bit about TNA Impact, and we'll talk about Raw in the final segment. They Claire Lynch returned this week, believe it or not. The woman who is pregnant, and at the end of the show, they revealed that she is pregnant. Well, by they, I mean Chris Daniels accused her of having a child fathered. Good God Almighty. Help me out, Mike. Claire Lynch, the father of her baby, according to Daniels, is AJ Styles. That was a twist this week. What's your thought on Impact and this odd storyline?
In a way, I could see why they continued it out, because they in backstage interviews they tried to tie together storyline holes, like why AJ dragged Dixie Happy into a hotel room. Well, the reason now it's because he was excited and Claire was in there. Why Surge, you know, has not been, you know, kept out of the loop about all of this stuff, and it's a surprise party, but Claire wasn't there, and all of this nonsense, which really revolved around Kaz even trying to fake Hulk Hogan out, and ultimately, you know, turning on AJ Styles at the end of the match after teasing issues with him all night long, and he ends up winning the titles alongside alongside Daniels. It just didn't work for me at all. Again, if they're going to be done with this, I hope it's really soon, even though it doesn't look like they will be.
I actually kind of like the twist of the accusation that AJ was the father, and I'd had a problem with the storyline, if you listen to the Observer Radio the other day, but I think the storyline hole could be filled. Somebody brought this up, so we're going to talk about this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, head to WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this program, Wrestling Observer Live on Sirius Satellite Radio, XM Radio, streaming worldwide on the internet. If you love it and you only get to hear it once per week, you're missing out. We do shows every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. You can sign up for a subscription. It's $10.99 a month. Download shows every day to your iPod, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android, whatever you listen to your audio on. Download them. They're MP3 files. We have samples on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. You just head over to the right-hand side of the page, click on the latest three free radio shows, download them, and if you like what you hear, sign up, everybody. As noted, it's only $10.99 a month. If you want to try and sign up once, and if you don't like it and never sign up again, you are welcome to do so. But I think if you sign up, you're going to be a subscriber for life. Not only to get all of the brand new radio shows, including interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of pro wrestling. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, by the way, was on the show last week. Anyway, if you sign up, not only to get all of the new shows that we do every single week, but every show that we have ever done in history is available in the archives right now. If you want to hear shows from 2005, 2006, 2007, all the way up until today, those are all available for you right now. Tens of thousands of hours of audio are available in the archive, so check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. I've said it a million times. If you like this show, I guarantee you that you will love a subscription or a loved one to WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check that out. We're talking about the Claire Lynch storyline, and I had a problem with the storyline in the sense that I thought, okay, so Claire Lynch is supposedly carrying the unborn child of AJ Styles. And Daniels has made this accusation. Now, in order for the storyline to continue, Claire Lynch can't just go on TV next week and say, well, it's not AJ's child. There's got to be some mystery. And the only way to have mystery is for her to go, well, I don't know if it's AJ's child. Now, if you say that, then essentially that's saying that, in fact, her and AJ did have an affair, but she doesn't know if it's his child. AJ Styles is a babyface. His wife was mentioned on TV this past week. I don't think that the idea is that you want people to believe that AJ did, in fact, cheat on his wife. So I was thinking, well, how do you do the storyline then? How do you get this storyline going and have Claire say that she doesn't know if it's AJ's child? The only way she would know is if they had never had relations. So in order to say that I don't know if it's his, that indicates that, in fact, they did have an affair. So I don't know who it was that brought this up. I think it was somebody on our board. But they simply said the way out of the storyline is to say that this happened. Although this also causes problems because you're talking about a woman getting pregnant while on drugs. But you say something to the effect of she was on drugs when she became pregnant and she doesn't remember what happened. She doesn't remember who it was. And so it could be anybody. And that does not necessarily mean that she remembers having relations with anybody. So she could say, you know what? I don't know if it was AJ Styles because I don't even know what happened. I don't know who it was. I don't even know when it was. I just know that I'm now pregnant and clean, of course. So I think that's the way to get out of that storyline loophole there of I guess, bringing some drama into the storyline without outright saying that AJ did, in fact, have an affair. Because I presume in the end it's going to come out that he didn't because he's a babyface. Am I thinking too much about this, Mike?
Yes, you are. And I think it kind of sucks, too, because if you think about it, then you are now trashing AJ Styles all the way around, and he's had a persona, and everybody knows what it is, and family man, and God-fearing, and the whole nine yards there.
Well, no, you're not trashing the storyline.
But yes, you are. I mean, why? If you were going to add drama into this, why have it point out that she was not at the pool party, or unless this is the direction they're going to go, where Dixie may have forgot she was at the pool party, why not have her just go, yeah, I was at the pool party, and maybe she relapsed there, or, you know, but they made sure to say that she was not there. So when else was this going to happen, and what kind of person is AJ Styles? Because, again, you're now changing the whole story, and again, if it was just something for a heel to throw out there at the end, I don't know. I am not a big fan of this and the direction that it went, and I don't, yes, they tied up plot holes this week, but I'm not buying her, and I'm just not, unfortunately, buying the story. I mean, I'm buying Joseph Park, you know, challenging Bully Ray more than I'm believing this, and it's, I don't know, it was, again, Kaz, the whole thing with Kaz and winning the titles this week, I mean, that could have been drawn on for a little bit longer, but I don't know. Maybe they need AJ's sole attention to, you know, not have to worry about the tag titles and just worry about what's going to happen with possibly maybe cheating on his wife with a woman who was all drugged up and out of it and all that nonsense.
Well, my big issue is, in fact, Claire Lynch. I mean, say all you want about the storyline, but that is a big barrier to making this work. Claire Lynch is a terrible actress.
They've had a history of some bad acting women up in there. They've had some bad acting dudes, too, but they have not had the best. Who's your girl? She was actually pretty good.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The reporters that you liked.
The who?
Not Goldilocks. Yes.
No.
There was one of them that actually showcased a little bit of personality, and I can't remember who it was, but I don't know. Claire Lynch, no, not happening.
Raw this past Monday night. Any thoughts on that show?
Not really.
I can't even remember anything that happened on that show now that I think about it. What was this
That's
past?
The problem. I'm upset I can't get NXT. I heard Lance talk about it on the show this week. I have not seen NXT yet. I'm more interested in seeing that.
What was on Raw? This should be like a trivia contest now.
Well, everybody's joining the ladder match. We know that from Money in the Bank. It's all about the champions.
I remember that from SmackDown.
Oh, they introduced it on Raw when Vicky first started yelling about.
What happened on Raw? I'm going to have to go
Santino
to...
Santino beat Jack Swagger.
What was that?
Santino beat Jack Swagger.
That's right. What was like the big storyline throughout the show? Was there even one? I'm going to go to my own newsletter right now and...
I think it was Money in the Bank, and the fact that Cena came out, cut the...
I remember. It was the pole match.
Okay.
Remember Del Rio and Dolph, and they are chasing the thing all over the place and that sort of thing? I remember. And it opened with the three-way that everybody was so angry about. I'm starting to remember the show now. So we had
lots of AJ skipping.
Yes. Now that brings me to the question. They started with a three-way, Kane, Brian, and Punk. Brian ended up pinning Punk after AJ skipped around the ring. And they announced on SmackDown that, in fact, it is going to be Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk for the title at Money in the Bank, and AJ is going to be special guest referee based on, get this everybody, a poll on WWE.com, how do you want to see AJ involved in the match? And it was like, such a stupid poll. The options were a guest timekeeper, a guest commentator, a guest ring announcer, or a guest referee. And of course, everyone chose guest referee, so now she's going to ruin the match. And certainly she will determine who the winner is. But who do you expect to walk out of this match as the champion? Is CM Punk going to retain, or is AJ going to get together with Daniel Bryan yet again and give him the title? I guess
Kane.
Is a 4-month storyline of her losing the title for him and then finally getting it back for him.
Do we know where Kane is in all this? Or maybe Kane wins it on Monday night afterwards, whoever beats whoever. I don't know. I'm going to say she screws Punk and Brian gets the title. I'll go ahead and go with that one. So, you know, I saw the AJ All hashtag on Monday night. It was a little late to tuning into Raw because I usually just don't care anymore and tend to watch it on Universal HD on Saturdays more than anything else. But I was a little late to tuning it in, and I was just thinking when I saw the hashtag AJ All, have they now gotten to the point where, because we're around the same age, remember in middle school you had the computer and you could play Oregon Trail, but even before that we had books that were choose your own adventure books, and I don't know if they still exist now.
I remember those.
Yeah, you know, Avery's got like the iPad now, so he just, you know, books are lost on him in that fashion. But we had those books, and that's almost like this was like. I mean, it was. Could you have ever believed you'd have Daniel Bryan, Kane, and CM Punk holding on to the world title, being on pay-per-views for people to spend money on, and you basically have a choose-your-own-adventure book?
That's what this is, essentially. There's going to be a lot more of it, too, when they go 3 hours. It's going to be all interactive all the time. There's going to be polls up the yin-yang. What a drop that'll be.
And you know what? Taylor Hendricks actually was the thing that stood out to me this week as trending on Twitter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we didn't even talk about Taylor Hendricks. Would you have hired her?
Actually, yeah, I would have. And I knew when Al Snow, who's got had the most access to her by far, through Ohio Valley, I had a feeling when he said no, it was pretty obvious that Pritchard was going to say yes, and she was going to get the spot on there. And I think it's a good move. And the fact, you know, as long as she is not pushed in anything major and she continues to work indies and stuff like that, I think it's a good move. And realistically, who knows now, when it came to Austin, when it came to Joey Ryan, did they just do that intentionally because Ric Flair flipped the script and hired Chris Silva that first week? Was the plan to hire Joey Ryan? Or are they making the best out of a bad situation? I don't know, but I think it's a very smart move because Joey Ryan's one of those few guys out there on the indie scene who you don't have, who can sell merchandise and has got a gimmick. And, you know, he may not be at the top of the card or a major player or anything like that, but who cares? You don't have to. You're putting on a TV show, which is important to you, and I have a feeling he could have a spot on it, and it looks like that's going to be the case with him and Taz, which I thought that came off really well with him coming through the crowd with the 87%, you know, can't be wrong sign or whatever it was.
Now, how do you hire him in storyline?
He just, he continues to annoy Taz that much, or he continues to be someone who gets in the way where it just, you know, just very old school. You can just go, you know what, hire this guy so we can beat the crap out of him legally, because as far as we're concerned now, it would be like beating up a fan. And, you know, you see how WWE is doing right now, trying to figure out how they can have Paul Heyman not own the company since he said he would, and he would sue them for all sorts of money, and why would he drop that? You know, maybe they looked at that and just decided, one of those bad storylines is enough.
Brock Lesnar is back on the three-hour Raw. They're teasing a return tomorrow, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be something like Brock Lesnar via satellite. I actually don't expect him to be in the building tomorrow. He's got a very limited number of dates. And they have him scheduled for the three-hour Raw. And I believe August 9th, I believe it is, which is, maybe it's August 6th, whenever it is. They're doing a Shawn Michaels appreciation night on Raw. I guess that'd be August 6th, since the 9th is a Thursday. But he's going to be at that show as well. So I expect that on Shawn Michaels appreciation night, he appreciates Shawn Michaels through the ring with an F5, and that, of course, further sets up the match with Triple H at SummerSlam. But we are now about a month away from SummerSlam. We still got Money in the Bank to go through, but after that, it's going to be the road to SummerSlam. And looking forward now, Mike, any thoughts on whether Triple H is going to beat Brock Lesnar in that match? Because I still think that he is.
I still think that he's not. I'm not there. I don't know exactly what's going on. But unless you're going to agree to void the contract, to have him lose, then what are you going to do? Because to have him go, I don't know what his dates are, to have him go on a tear leading into the Royal Rumble and then leading into WrestleMania. I mean, do you even want him as part of the plan if you're going to beat him and he loses to Cena and Triple H? You know, what's then let him go and bring him back only at WrestleMania to face off against somebody. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And I'm not saying that that's...
I think it would be idiotic, but at the same time, Brock Lesnar broke Triple H's arm, and then I expect him to destroy Shawn Michaels. So in the end, I figure the babyface wins. That's my entire justification of this. We'll get your thoughts when we come back from the break. But I think Hunter's winning. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We've been talking Brock Lesnar, Triple H. My prediction that Triple H beats Brock based on the fact that Brock broke Hunter's arm and is probably going to destroy his best friend on Shawn Michaels' Appreciation Night. Only makes sense to me that in traditional WWE booking, the babyface gets the big win at the end. And then Brock Lesnar disappears all the way through about the Royal Rumble, maybe even later, and you set up whatever his match is for WrestleMania, which could be, actually, against The Undertaker. Mike, your final thoughts on any of this?
Yeah, you know, if it's The Undertaker, it doesn't really matter if he loses a Triple H, because people still would want to see that. It just... You're going to have a monster face off against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, or whenever you're going to have the big blow off for him. And it's either face John Cena again, so he gets revenge and Cena beats him again, or Triple H winning and getting revenge over him. I could see that making sense. I could see a legend doing it, but all of that will only, I think, mean something if he beats somebody. And the only guy he can beat that would make sense, it doesn't hurt any other part of the roster or anything else, is Triple H. He's already lost to John Cena. And Triple H can use this down the line in the future for PR purposes for himself, both professionally and on TV or personally. It doesn't matter. I laid down and did the job for him. It didn't, you know, hurt me or anything like that. He'll always be able to say that. And realistically, he should be the one saying that, because Brock Lesnar needs to win at some point. And again, if all the shine's off of him, then who cares? You know, then don't have him around at all until WrestleMania. Because what's the point?
I think that if you're going to do the Undertaker match, the only way the Undertaker match is a draw any more than anything else at WrestleMania is if you try to put doubt into people's mind that Undertaker is going to win. And that's almost impossible to do. I mean, it's virtually impossible. They tried really hard this year by doing the storyline that Shawn might screw him and that sort of thing. But if Hunter beats Brock and Brock has lost to everybody in every match he's had, there's no way you're convincing people he's beating Undertaker. But that's the discussion for next week's show. We're totally out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Mike, as always, all the folks at Sports Byline. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.